Hello and welcome to the Wit and Delight podcast. I'm your host, Kate Ahrens, founder of Wit and Delight. As a recovering perfectionist, mother of two, and juggler of many businesses, I know how hard it is to find time. Time to reflect on yourself, your choices, and who you're becoming. So if you're new to this podcast, sometimes you'll find myself and a guest discussing where life and style intersect and how the choices we make, both big and small, can help us find empowerment and self-discovery in unexpected places. Okay, now for today's episode. Hello, hello, Wit and Delight listeners. Today I have a wonderful interview with my friend Chelsea Brink. Chelsea and I have followed each other on Twitter for a really long time, and what brought us together to talk on the podcast was essentially the link between creativity and mental illness. Chelsea and I have both gone through different paths of exploring what it is like to, one, accept one's unique brain, and two, figure out the best way to live with it and work with it, knowing that creativity often requires us to go deeper inside ourselves to tap into things that are a little bit more taxing on your emotional well-being in order to make your work. They can be taxing emotionally, intellectually, physically, and at times exploring those depths feels like part of the job. So how do we protect our well-being, really understand who we are, and find better ways to work? Chelsea and I really dove deep into the ways that we've changed since we were starting out as young designers and have some really great tips for all of you guys out there who are looking for better ways to work, whether it's adding medication into your life, therapy, or just getting a better sense of awareness around your own actions and behavior. Okay, here is my interview with Chelsea Brink, creative person specializing in design, illustration, and art direction. Chelsea.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we're sitting in Studio 125 in my office. We're sitting very close next to the microphone. But Chelsea is someone that we met online, right? We met on Twitter.
Yeah.
Was it Twitter?
It was Twitter.
Yep, it was Twitter. We both have kind of fun, similar paths in terms of being graphic designers and going out on our own and kind of being independent in terms of what we've been working on, also working with other companies, and just someone that I've enjoyed following, not only for your work, but for, I don't know how you talk about life around your work. So I thought maybe today we'd talk about creativity and just what makes our unique brains so well equipped to take on kind of a career path that some people are like, well, arts, creativity, mm-hmm. where can be really successful in that. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about when you knew you were going to go into a creative path and maybe had kind of a unique way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm. The best example I can think of is actually something my mom always talks to me about. Maybe it was when she knew, but when I was a kid, I always used to put my puzzles together upside down. And so I would look at the shapes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I would be able to see, you know, just by looking at the shapes, how puzzles would be put together. I also knew at a young age too, I was very particular, even just about the clothes that I wore, mm-hmm. like exactly how a logo was placed on a shirt, those kinds of things, yeah. you know, dressing myself and as well as like expressing myself in my room mm-hmm. and all of that type of stuff.
Yep.
And then I got into the arts at a really young age. I always loved art class, of course, but then did music, played violin, okay. played piano, sang mm-hmm. in the choir, did theater, did visual arts. So I was like very much in like yep. that world yep. from a super young age.
Was there someone who really helped spark, see that in yourself? Or is it something that you've always kind of felt that your path was driving towards that? Or did you have anyone along the way that really kind of helped you, encouraged you to just follow it and, yeah. and not look back?
So many, I think. One really formative creative person was the orchestra teacher in my fifth grade. Mm-hmm. That was the year that we entered into orchestra, and he at the time was like 27, which is weird thinking that I'm like older than that he was then. Right. But he was so inspiring and took just a really fresh approach to music. And so you think of like classical music when you think of orchestra and boring and whatnot, mm-hmm. but he got people so excited, and he really fostered, I feel like, my love for the arts in general. Yep. And I always remember him saying one thing to me if I had to like sum up my experience with him, and he was like, you have to love the music, not the instructor or the yeah. what's the word I'm looking for?
The composer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of carried with me into a lot of different realms. Mm-hmm. I had an amazing theater teacher as well.
Yeah. So it's the love of what it creates, not your relationship with the act of doing it, or like the struggle or the practice.
Totally. Or even your just general surroundings. So like that would maybe translate into just like in a work environment, like your boss or your client or things like that. I mean, you kind of have to like be able to separate yourself from it a little bit.
Yep.
And love kind of like the craft.
The craft.
Yeah.
Yep. That's such a great, advice on like how to not get burnout with everything that goes into making life just happen. You know, it's like there's that the moments that you enjoy, and then there's stuff that you just like have to do so you can enjoy those other moments. And that is part of just understanding how to take care of yourself so you're able to do your best work.
Right.
How long did it take you to kind of come to that realization? I mean, you hear it in the fifth grade, then it comes to now. I mean, have you had some like ups and downs along the way of kind of figuring out how to balance the stuff that you have to do versus the stuff that you love to do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to come out with something just like very dramatic off the bat here, but like I've spent pretty much my whole life in sort of a series of like anxious and depressive patterns. Mm-hmm. Like 100% of the time would say like I got to a point about a year and a half ago now where I had this like epiphany moment, and I've done therapy for many years, like over a decade on and off, different therapists since I've moved around the country a bit. But I found a great therapist. I decided to commit to seeing her every other week for an extended period of time. So it's been over a year now. But I went in with this epiphany of like, I can't point to a time in my life where I've ever been happy. Ever.
Oh,
which is like heavy.
It's very heavy. But very, something I can very much relate to.
Yeah.
There are moments of joy and there's moments of like feeling happiness, but like the steady state, the constant state is one of melancholy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that realization, I mean, I'm sure, how old were you when you kind of realized that?
So that was just like in the last like year and a half, truly. And I felt it for a long time. I've been aware of it, but I've never been able to really crystallize it down into like, I'm not even really feeling many periods of joy or happiness at all. Like it's all kind of like bogged down. In that mostly anxious brain for me, but I'd go through significant periods of depression as well.
One question we get a lot, because there's this huge link between people who are in the creative industry and mental illness. I think I've heard something like 95% are experiencing some kind of low-level mood disorder, which means you sort of feel the highs higher and the lows lower, all the way down to, you know, being severely depressed for a point in time where it's sort of the norm. How have you seen the ability to continue to make work as it relates to this kind of constant feeling of being bogged down, because life doesn't stop, even though you are in a place where it is, you know, your alarm bells are not really going up, but you're realizing that, okay, I need to kind of look at this as it is, and find a way to kind of live, live my own life with my own unique brain. How has that related to creativity?
So I think for me, I'm also, beyond being a creative, I'm also very much, I took one of millions of personality tests last week, and I kind of love them, and I just think it's interesting to reflect on that kind of stuff. My main, one of my main traits was like a deliverer. So I've always been someone who finds a lot of value and like self-worth in completing a task and being somebody who's very reliable. So that has been always a driver for me.
Okay.
I don't think that everyone carries that personality trait, and I think that'll be a larger part of the conversation is how all of our brains work so differently, and you have to kind of like tap into those things that work. But for me, that's a driver. Like I have to get this done. But it doesn't make the work necessarily super enjoyable.
Right.
So in the last couple of years, I've started to really become more aware and comfortable with what, how my brain works and what it takes to get that work done. So I know that what makes me a great graphic designer is that I can see a lot of pathways and I can see a lot of different directions something could go.
Yep.
But then I can also pick apart everything. Mm-hmm. So it can make it really hard to get to a final answer because I will spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. Mm-hmm. And also learning a lot about myself being a verbal processor. Like I need to talk through things.
Yep.
It can be extremely hard for me to just sit at my computer and create and just like be like, okay, now I'm done.
Yep.
I'm working on a huge, like the biggest project of my life right now. And I actually had to call a friend this weekend and be like, hey, are you busy tomorrow? Like, can you come over for 2 hours?
Yeah.
And essentially just let me like talk this out and get some feedback. But mostly I just need, like, as soon as I say it out loud, I know I'm going to be able to like process it better and organize my thoughts.
Which can be really hard when you're working, one, for yourself or if you're an extension of an agency.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you have to ask for help.
Yeah.
Which, it, like, when you're in the process of creating something that is very, work is personal. It always is, as it's kind of coming out. Even if you objectively are like, this is not my baby, I'm sending it off, I can make, you know, however many other solutions. When you're in that thick, like, asking to talk through it, I mean, that's something, I love that you just told that story because that's something that I'm really struggling with, too.
Yeah.
I'm talking to a recorder.
Yeah.
But even, like, I'm, like, I have to, like, put, like, a stuffed animal here or someone's face, you know? But asking for, like, a real human person to come and sit there, it's different when you're verbally talking through it.
Right. And I think, too, there's this, like, mentality on the internet and everywhere that, like, we shouldn't need someone else to like help us through. It's like the most feared woman is the woman who doesn't need the, you know, whether I think that that's more about like people's, I wish I could remember that exact quote. It's something about like, you don't need the validation of others and things like that. But I think there is a reality where you do, maybe it's not necessarily validation, but like that ability to, like,
we're pack animals. We came from villages where everyone raised their kids. I think in general, we're social beings. And even as we are more connected than ever before, there's this raising trend of isolationism, even though people are have all these different ways to connect. And I think you're touching on really this idea that, you know, not only are with this women's empowerment coming into a new age of just this new evolution where we're learning how to pick each other up and ask each other questions and be there for each other, not just for the successes, but for the process and for the hairy times and for really understanding that all of us need that from one another and that you can give and understand that someone's going to be there when you need to take from them.
Totally.
Which is really cool. We're beginning to see pockets of it, but there's this ever prevalent hustle culture where it's like, if I'm not hustling all the time, then I'm not really doing. And it's like, that inherently is very independent minded.
Right.
Versus, I think that there is people who help you along the way get to the point of where that doing and in getting to this next phase of your career, this next big hurdle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that I think are important along the way, especially when you are kind of understanding how you work.
Yeah.
And knowing that connection is so important.
Totally.
Okay, so that was a great tangent to go off of. You've talked a little bit about like kind of figuring out how to hack your own brain a little bit when you are, you know, feeling like, okay, getting from point A to point B, you know how to get there. It's gonna hurt sometimes to get to that point. Were there any myths that you had to debunk about your own creative process or just kind of, did you have sort of an idea of what you felt it meant to be a creative? Like, sometimes people say, like, I have to hate everything that I do and, you know, suffer through it to find the right answer. When the answers maybe come naturally, do you ever kind of feel like, I have to, like, suffer through this in order for it to be good?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, definitely a point where, too, even in this same project, where it's like, oh, the answers are coming naturally to me.
Right.
It's not necessarily taking hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. You know, it's like, it's just, I've gotten to a point where it's like, oh, this is clear. But, yeah, it does feel like I should be spending more hours on this. I should be, like, this should be harder for me. Like, but then you look at it from the outside and you're like, oh, no, that means you're doing what you should be doing. Yep. So I still would say I'm learning to enjoy and respect that, like, oh no, I'm being hired for these things that I'm already good at.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be a painful process. I think so. My therapist is very focused in family of origin stuff. So it's like, I know from patterns in growing up that my brain just tends to process things very negatively. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of just will find problems again, being like, I've scanned for errors is what we always talk about.
Oh, that's a good,
therapy is like, I will be able to like in any moment, any given situation, like just find things that are inherently wrong, which again makes me a great designer and creative person, but also can really stall. So just trying to be like, nope, this is okay. I don't need to kill myself over everything in order to deserve what I'm receiving in return.
Right. How do you find ways to be self-aware of those patterns while you're making things?
It has taken a lot of work. Like it does. I hate that it's like, it takes years of, you know, kind of like work through therapy and other things, but it, it has not been an overnight thing. And I think maybe thinking of myths or like expectations, like, and you've talked about this a lot on your social media, which I've appreciated recently, of like, it is a tiny baby step every day over years and years, which if you're at the beginning of like a mental health journey can just seem so daunting.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, just like, oh, please, you know, and then just feeling like you're never going to get there. And for me, it's taken almost a decade again of like being in therapy on and off, but to finally be like, oh, I'm not where I was like 10,000 steps back, but it's hard to see those tiny incremental steps all the way because it isn't an overnight thing. I would love to wake up one day and just be like, oh my God, today is the day where everything's just perfect now. You know, I've just like got my shit together, you know?
Yeah.
But it's never going to be that. So I've just like, it's taken years for me to really appreciate to even have a moment of joy and sit with it and reflect.
Right.
And like laugh at myself.
Right.
I was like in the car the other day and I tipped my shades at a semi truck that had a very cool color palette.
Yep, yep.
And I was like, okay.
That was awesome.
I was like, okay, that's funny.
Yep, and that was you just being you, you know, like kind of getting outside yourself. Yeah, I think there's so much of what you just said that I want to come back to.
Yeah.
But sometimes we take ourselves and our situation so serious, especially our mental health journey.
Yeah.
And it is a very heavy, hard, painful experience. And I'm coming up on, I think, almost, let's see, it's probably 8 years of my own mental health journey. Mm-hmm. And there's been high points and low points. And there's been months where I've been like, you know, it's always been with me, but I'll have like room for a little bit more life. And then I would say for the past 18 months, I've been like right there with you, like in the like the thick, the heavy fog. And finding moments where you're just sort of like, I'm just, all that stuff is like still with me, but I'm just going to like enjoy this one second, this one moment of joy.
Yeah.
When we're talking about baby steps, someone, this was sort of an interesting thought that kind of unraveled my own judgment on baby steps. Someone said, well, why isn't that one thing good enough? Why isn't making that one small change like enough for you to feel like good about? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's almost like because you have huge goals, or maybe because you are, got this creative genius that you can kind of see all these different pathways to solving problems. Mm-hmm. When you're big problem solvers, sometimes those little things are kind of like, oh, it's nothing compared to this whole thing.
Right.
But the reality is that if small things are hard for you, then maybe that's more worth celebrating.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, it's like drinking water.
Yeah.
Like I woke up this morning and I'm like, you did not want to drink water yesterday for whatever reason.
Yeah.
For just being like a child.
Yeah.
You were just like, I have other things to do. This is like, I've got this down. And it's like, no, you're going to sit your butt down and you're going to drink 64 ounces of water. But, you know, you go off and like build a business, do this other stuff. So it's like, why are these small things to be looked down upon? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think too, even just like with the water example, it's like, we're always finding things to just like beat ourselves up about.
Exactly.
Too, you know,
exactly.
Where it's just like, oh my gosh, like give ourselves a break. I think, you know, something that's always stuck with me too is like that idea of like, would you talk to your best friend the way you talk to yourself?
Yes.
You know?
I love that one.
Yeah. And I, not that I've like gotten really great at that, but it is something like in moments of like being down or being really hyper judgmental of myself, I try to keep in mind. It doesn't always like flip the switch for me, but,
I've gotten to the point in my mental health journey where I used to very much talk, when I needed to find hold space for myself or find compassion for myself, mm-hmm. I would imagine myself at 2 years old. Mm-hmm. Which I think were like some of my first memories, and I was extremely shy, so shy that I like didn't speak in mm-hmm. kindergarten, and like afraid of like of being noticed. Mm-hmm. And so I look at that little girl and I can't be so hard on her, because I think deep down, like, I know what it feels like every day to feel like, oh my God, someone's looking at me, mm-hmm. and I could feel that fragility. Now it's almost flipped, where the person who's been harder on me is now looking at this like new person who's like, okay, you've shed all that crap. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do now? And it's taken on this point of view where it's like, it's tough love, but it's also like, I know you can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like coaching. It's mm-hmm. like the mother that was like, I believe in you. Mm-hmm. And that toughness that I used to beat myself up about, it's still there, mm-hmm. but I've kind of given her a better job. Mm-hmm. I've given her the job of like, you know you can do this. Like, you know you can drink that water. Like, yeah. And so I'm beginning to see that shift of this inner critic becoming a real advocate.
That's
and
awesome.
Like, there's kind of room for her now. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't need to be like shoved away and is like a total bitch. And sometimes she is, yeah. for sure. She's now not worrying about what other people are doing, what other people are thinking. Yeah. She's like, you're able to do this. So what would you say to someone who is maybe afraid to confront some of the heaviness they might be feeling, and that they've maybe used that heaviness or used that brooding to make great work? Because mm-hmm. it's a kind of a catch-22, as we were talking about before, that there's also fear that if I medicate, then I'm not going to be able to access these depths mm-hmm. of myself where sometimes I pull creative work mm-hmm. out.
I think that the healthier your mental state can be, the better your creativity is ultimately going to get. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that is such a huge part of our industry and creativity in general, of like, yeah, this feeling of, especially in art, you know, like you just kind of need to be in a really messed up state to like, it's a dramatic thing. And it's kind of our egos like kind of just feeding on,
right.
And that negativity just feeding on itself, you know, and it just kind of gets, for me, it just got really kind of melodramatic, you know, like I would, the depressive piece side of me would, my healthier, higher self would look at the depressive side and just be like, oh my God, like one, compassion for like, you know, and empathy around that, but also too, like, come on, like there has to be more to this. And I think, but it, again, going back to it, like being really daunting to like yeah. seek help. And then when someone's like, oh, how do I find a good therapist? Or what do I even do? People are like, go to psychologytoday.com or something. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
God, no.
Like that sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
Other people love it because it's like an easy way to just sort of like yep. shop.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I really like crave connection and deep mm-hmm. connection. And that's one of the hardest parts. I'm kind of like jumping forward maybe to like how you get started.
Yeah. You know, which finding. I think we should talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get started? And then how do you set yourself up for success? You
right.
know, because it takes, I like to always tell people, if you're even contemplating this, like you've already are at a point where things are pretty.
Yeah.
You're ready to make a change. You're like, mm-hmm. I cannot live like this anymore.
Right.
So give yourself credit for being like, it's not going to get much worse than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it might,
yeah.
but at least you'll have someone who's like with you along the way versus being like, why am I feeling like this?
Right.
Like, what is happening? Which is so disorienting. So let's say, you know, you know you want to go.
Yeah.
You are willing to not know what's going to be on the other side, but
yeah.
you're willing to say that that's going to be better than where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Let's say step one.
Yeah.
What do you look for in a therapist
yeah.
That you know that you like, especially as a creative person who's like craves connection?
Yeah. So the way I found my current therapist actually was through talking with a friend who loved her therapist. Mm-hmm. And she was like, she laughs and she swears and we, you know, we just talk and she yeah. pushes me, but and I followed up with her after the fact and I was like, hey, would you ever be willing to like refer me to her?
Yeah.
And she was totally happy to
yeah.
do it, and now a few of my friends actually see her.
Yeah.
So I would say if you have friendships and things like that,
yep.
can be really helpful, or community spaces in general. I'm a part of a local Slack group here that is for creatives, and we have a therapy channel, and
amazing.
People have gone to that channel being like, hey, I'm I'm just starting to think about this, and I've referred my therapist in there, and, you know, so.
On that channel, do you guys kind of help advocate for each other?
Yes.
People, oh, that's amazing.
Big time.
What kind of topics come up there?
All kinds, like from, you know, interpersonal relationship stuff with friends and family to work, a lot of creativity and work stuff, to just like general, you know, somebody will just pop in having an anxious moment and there'll be somebody around to be like, oh man, you know, I meet them with empathy, you know, like I've been there, you know, because usually, and again, going back to a lot of things I've learned from my therapist, but like, you can only shut down, like, and this is Brené Brown speaking through my therapist, but like, you can only really meet shame with empathy. Like, that's the only way to overcome shame.
Yep.
So a lot of that is like shame coming up and people just like feeling that there's something inherently wrong with them. And then if that can be met with empathy, that's how you just like start to shut it down, you know?
Yep. And when you can't do it for yourself, hearing someone else do it for you oftentimes can help break that cycle.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes it's not the only thing that will work. Sometimes it's just a bad day, but it means amazing how powerful empathy can be in terms of just shifting someone's spiral perspective. So say you find that therapist, how do you know that you're with someone that for the, like, cause these are long-term commitments usually, right? I saw mine for 5 years. And then she still is on call when I had my kids, called her and I had a couple appointments. I brought Joe in once when we needed to talk through some things. What would you say, like, how did you know that yours was the right one for you?
Yeah. So I would say I knew in the first couple sessions because there's so much to being able, for a therapist to be able to frame things in a way that works for your brain.
Yes.
So some people are, some therapists are very into like visualization and some are very into like other, you know, ways of processing things. And mine, she just brought up a few things. Again, she's really into family of origin stuff. So there were just like aha moments right out the gate.
Right.
You know, so I think one of my friends is just thinking about starting therapy. And so, but she's like, it is so scary to think about having to go in and spill your guts and then like not have the person be a match.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I think that's also too part of getting over a lot of that mental, you know, just like the stigma too, is like, just start thinking of it as practicing sharing your story rather than like, oh my God, I'm going to go tell someone all this stuff and it's not going to be a fit.
I love
like,
that. Yeah.
You know, just like getting used to like talking about it.
Is get comfortable with your own narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I even remember the, I'm very into like the, and this is like a hot thing right now, but the Instagram therapists.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm all over the holistic therapist.
Yes.
I'm
And she was just like, your body doesn't heal from trauma from just talking about it, but you have to like get in touch with your body.
Yep.
But I think starting to talk about things is where you kind of start.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to get comfortable with your narrative so you can really then get in touch with the things beyond that.
You know, that reminds me of when I finally jumped off that cliff and it was just, you know, sessions and sessions of just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing, which is so physical. I mean, it is that like, the stuff that I'd never really released or I released through drinking or through, you know, like exercising too much or like kind of like there was no, it needed to go somewhere, but it needed to come out that way. I think sometimes you're like, you're afraid of the thought and you're afraid of the truth of it. I think you're also afraid of what your body's going to do once it like, once you like acknowledge it. And that's a real fear. I mean, that is like an admirable, real thing to fear. But what's on the other side, and I think you and I can both attest, is I think a whole new world. Like I found that therapy really is like, it hurts and it hurts for a really long time. And it takes years and years and years to kind of unlearn or live with yourself. But it's so much better than the alternative.
It is. It is. And I would say one thing too, that we haven't touched on is for me, I've been on medication in the past. I've not been in the last like 7-ish years.
Yeah.
And with my therapist, it's been like a year and a half. And we decided that it was time for me to go see a psychiatrist as well, because she's like, there, we've like made so much progress. There does seem to be more there, where I think if you are able to just like boost some levels levels in your brain, you might be able to process this stuff even better. So I actually saw a psychiatrist in Minneapolis who's actually written some books, because I'm like a just deep end person. Like, if I'm gonna do it, I want to just get the best. Like, I want to know that I'm seeing someone, because it's stress. It's so stressful.
It is, especially with antidepressants, because it stays in your system for a while. It's a big decision.
So I and I hadn't had a lot of luck with stuff I've been on in the past, so I saw this psychiatrist and he was saying, oh well, you've only been on ones that really boost serotonin, and it does seem like you'd benefit from a little bit of a boost in dopamine. Now he's a holistic psychiatrist, so he comes at things with Eastern and Western medicine. So he started me actually on some herbs.
I've done some of those too.
Seems to be helpful, but I'm certainly up for, you know.
It's so great when you find medical professionals like that, because it is, I mean, it's crazy that they even have taught medicine without kind of considering sort of the holistic package. And I've talked to a lot of people, it sounds like that's changing. However, when I started seeing a holistic chiropractor, and I was like, well, I'm on this and this, and he's like, you're going to be on that antidepressant for a while. He goes, that is exactly what you need to be. He goes, maybe we can get you off. But, you know, it's such a small change in the grand scheme of things that I resisted for so long, where it was the moment for me where a lot of the blocks started clicking. And it was only because I had the help of just a smoother path to realization. And that's hard, I think, for people who are hyper-intelligent, where we give our brains so much power, and our thoughts so much power, and our grit so much power, and our ability to outsmart or outthink or work through it, that there's a physical aspect of things, and there's a physical aspect of the way that our brains are wired, and it's sometimes genetic, you know? And I think that's what's so interesting about also family patterning, but also family history. And I think about, you know, people in my life, and I'm like, well, it makes sense that I'm more melancholy if I look at my father, or like, you know, that's just sometimes helps you take the shame out.
Totally. And I think too, like, really quick on that as well, is like, I've gotten to a point, I'm an only child, so I kind of was just raised with no peers, but I've gotten to a point now, and I was, I mean, very Scandinavian, very Midwest, like, no, you know, and German, like, just very quiet about feelings in the household, none of it. And so, but getting to it, being an adult and having a good relationship with my mom and talking with her more openly about mental health now, and her being like, I see a lot of my younger self in you,
So
you know, but she didn't have the world that we have now.
Absolutely.
We are like talking about it. And I, you know, so I think if you can talk to your family, and also too, when we talk family of origin, like not going to like, oh, I'm blaming my parents, because you have to really think about like your parents are then products of how they were raised, and it goes back and back and back and back and back. So it's not about a blame game. It's just like recognizing like, oh, because your parents more likely than not did the best that they could with what they had.
Absolutely.
Maybe they didn't make all the right decisions. And my mom has, I feel very lucky that my mom has been open with like, maybe I didn't
make
the right decisions, but I did the best I could when I could, you know,
I mean, it just, the health of her being there to do that for you is like, that's such a sign of love. And also just like, that's when you, I think you really do know that your parents did the best that they could. Cause I went through a phase where I was just pissed at my parents. And I think I had such a far way to go with my own self-awareness. I mean, I was like so far from just getting back to center, and then now kind of going past that, that my parents sat there and listened and they didn't get angry. They didn't get upset. And what I really did understand that, oh wait, this is a generational cycle. And remembering times when my grandmother would speak to my mom in a way that I would be like, that, I think back at it now and I'm like, how painful, you know? And then you kind of see that coming out in her, and then you can imagine that coming out with your own child. And, and I mean, I think it's such an important thing to remember that even if you are angry with your parents because you're in pain, that anger, you have a chance to stop that cycle by like, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a parent who will talk through it with you. I mean, it's a very, very healing way to really understand their love for you. And they can sit in your suffering and also try to understand.
Exactly.
And it's this great opportunity to stop that cycle. I think that's what's so interesting about our generation. I didn't want to have kids before I went to therapy.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I'm self enough aware that I can say, okay, my feelings are not coupled with yours. What you're doing is not triggering my stuff. Mm-hmm. I can separate them and I can stop the cycle. But before, I mean, it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't really understand how you're reacting to triggers, how are you supposed to help raise your child when they're inheriting?
Right.
That's a whole other thing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. But that just really quickly reminds me of a quote from Charlemagne the God. He's a radio host, New York morning hip hop radio host. And he always says, hurt people hurt people. Yeah. So it's just like a constant cycle. So if you can heal yourself, and even when we do come at things with the best intentions, sometimes we will accidentally hurt people.
Absolutely.
But like being able to, you know, like come at situations with our best intentions, you know, it's just there. And you also open the door to like talk through the hurt, you
Absolutely.
Know, rather than just, yeah, like you were saying, you know, just making it a pattern and kind of just creating destruction around you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how have you found your connections with people around you? How has that changed since you've really been, like, have your relationships with friends and family and mm-hmm. coworkers changed at all since you've been seeing therapists more regularly?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had to do any, like, work in boundaries or work with boundaries with work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say I'm still very much working on boundaries. Mm-hmm. It is very exciting when I'm able to channel that or, like, just to be able to be my truer self. That has come to light in a lot of interesting ways. Like, I have a really great friend, and he's been a friend for a long time. I'm single, but he's like someone in my stratosphere that I've always kind of just been like, oh,
yeah,
maybe, you know, maybe there's something more here.
Right.
And back in January, we were just out to dinner and I finally just brought it up.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just have to say, you know, like,
yeah,
I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that, you know, it is something I think about, and I don't know if you think about it
right.
ever. And I, at the time, I didn't know he was dating someone.
Okay.
And he was like, well, I am seeing someone. I would be lying if I said I've never thought about it. I do think of you as more of a friend. But, and we have this, like, such a deep connection that I was like, I know I can tell him.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be weird afterward. And
That's
he
amazing.
Sent me a text, like, a couple of weeks later being like, I hope you know how, like, heard and seen you were in that setting, and how, like, he was like, I've never been a part of a, you know, conversation that just felt so natural and good. So I think, like, just putting myself out there in those ways, and also to, like, even fast forwarding to now, which is like 6 months later, like starting to even just like be more in touch with my sexuality and all these things. Like, I had never even like thought, like, maybe I'm more sexually fluid than I thought.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of always, part of my mental health journey has been just completely suppressing my sexuality 100%. So I don't even know if I'm who I'm attracted to or what. So, but I've like started exploring that, and that's been starting to feel like way more natural, opening my eyes to just a lot more. So I just feel like there's this honesty with myself and others, and it's fostering such deeper connections and attracting me to like the best clients and like just people I vibe with and can talk about bigger things. And like the darker part of me feels like I don't deserve it, but I know that I do.
Yeah. That's your past trauma speaking.
Yeah, for
sure. Trying to protect you.
Yeah. And I do like struggle with feeling like just privileged too.
Oh,
you know, where it's just
absolutely.
Like, oh, I'm so like, you know.
You know, and it's, I mean, we are, both of us are, but
highly,
we are who we are too, you know? And so you have to kind of own where you're at, and, you know, continue to show up in a world where you can make a better, you know, I love that story that you could show up with your truth and with your comfort in it, that he felt that.
He
felt that he could be honest with you too.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, that's really special that you're able to not only like do that for yourself, but invite other people to like connect with you in the middle.
Totally. And I thought, like, if I would have done that at a different time in my life, I would have cried through the whole thing. I would have immediately just kind of like had the thought, you know, and been confident in the thought, but then just like let it overwhelm me and just like cry. And I still am a big crier, but like I got through that just like so level-headed, and I actually left feeling good.
That's awesome.
Even though he was like, yeah, no. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I kind of think I knew deep down that I probably wasn't going to be like, oh my God, I'm totally in love with you.
Right.
But yeah, it was like something that I do, like I've been trying to like celebrate those kinds of moments of like showing up, being my truest self, and Yeah.
I think for creatives, you know, we hear a lot of language that gets repeated a lot, and mm-hmm. a lot of concepts that get repeated a lot. And the mental health and self-help space is one that sometimes people are like, oh, I understand that. Oh, I know mm-hmm. it. And hearing you talk about your journey, especially mm-hmm. with seeing all these new perspectives or new situations that you could possibly entertain for mm-hmm. yourself, it's such an important thing to remember, is to sometimes the simplest concepts are the ones that are the hardest to understand. Mm-hmm. And then when you get past that, you really understand it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of this undeniable feeling of like knowing what that means to have truly understood that concept.
Right.
And I think that you've really encapsulated that, especially as you look at like, what do you want? You know, yeah. what do you want from your clients? What do you want out of your love life? What do yeah. you want out of your relationship with people? Because mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be so black and white.
It doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. And I think especially for our generation, it was very rigid, yeah. you know, and school was very rigid mm-hmm. and we were all taught to sort of like conform into, you know, kind of the same
yeah.
people, you know, yeah. roughly. And there wasn't a lot of like self-expression unless you, I didn't grow up in a big city. I know in Minneapolis, for example, there is like an arts high school and stuff like that. Yeah. But like in where I grew up, it was, I mean, we had a lot of arts programming and stuff, but you still were expected to kind of just like fall into a yeah. box.
Well, there, I mean, the ego and art, they're so intertwined. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're, do you question often, who would the artist be without the masks that they mm-hmm. wear, or how does it relate to the ego, or like mm-hmm. just generally like what does a healthier art community look like?
Right.
I don't know how we'll get there, but I do think that that's interesting. An individual oftentimes mm-hmm. is just as much as a stereotype when mm-hmm. you get into those kind of kinds of communities where you might not be on the fringe of society, but within every community, there is the standard expectation. Like, mm-hmm. and I think that that, you and I grew up for sure in that. I remember being like, I'm not a designer because I can't draw, or I'm not right. artsy, or I'm, you know, or yeah. like I'm a little bit more like basic,
yeah.
and realizing that no, you have incredibly creative thoughts. Just because you're not participating in certain things doesn't mean that you are any less of a creative.
Right.
So I do think that that grayness and kind of showing up and being who you are is going to be really important for more diversity and, you know, in museums and just general,
totally.
Like just diversity of just thoughts and thinking. And that
Absolutely.
Takes just like thinking about the ego a little differently.
Totally. Yeah. And I think for me, I've never considered myself an artist. It's just
yeah.
like not a thing. And this is, I think, kind of like a hotly contested, people fall on one end of the spectrum
right.
or the other. Like you think of yourself as an artist and you think it's like snobby when people don't and
right.
or you don't. And then you feel, you know, it's
right.
sort of like this back and forth. So I guess I've always been more focused on craft, and
yeah.
in design there's so much strategic thinking that
oh, of course, yeah.
for me, and a lot of my design friends are just like, I'm just gonna make a beautiful thing because
right.
that's what I do. And for me as a designer personally, I need a lot of strategy around what I'm making
yep.
in order to like make it make sense. But and then I just like, if other people think of it as, you know, something as art, that's cool, but
yeah. I've always thought that, and I'm kind of like looking at my own ego as I'm saying
mm-hmm.
that is it who do you think you are to
mm-hmm.
call yourself that?
Yeah,
right. And that's something I'm working on right now, is like being proud of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always tell people, I'm not a writer, or I'm
mm-hmm.
not, you know, I'm not
yeah.
this, or I'm this. Or like, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, ugh, I don't want to talk about it. And
yeah.
these are the things I choose to do, and they're my truth. And so to
mm-hmm.
give it a name and to give it a stake in the ground, I think sometimes it's either you don't want to because you feel like, who do you think you are for doing it,
mm-hmm.
or it becomes your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that middle ground between your ego and just existing is probably what being human's all about,
yeah.
or being an enlightened human is about.
Totally. I always said to a friend where he's just like, oh, those people seem like they got it all figured out. And I was like, you know what? I think the people that have it all figured out are the ones that are comfortable in knowing that they're never going to have it all
Absolutely.
Figured out. You know,
Absolutely.
Like getting to that point where it's like, I know a good friend of mine and a friend of yours as well, but Nora McInerney always says, you know, like any day that my life isn't like actively falling apart is just like a great day. You
yeah.
know, it's just like learning to, yeah, like have the moments of joy and sit
yeah.
with the happiness and being comfortable with like, maybe it is going to be fleeting.
Yeah.
You know, there are going to be times of like
yeah.
turmoil. We're never going to live a life free from pain and struggle.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we like set ourselves best up to enjoy the good.
Yeah.
Cause I'm the type that's like, if I'm in a good moment, my brain is on the next problem in my life.
So absolutely.
If I'm like enjoying time with
what danger lies ahead as I go into tomorrow.
Yep. Or like I'm hanging out with friends now, but tomorrow or after this, I'm gonna have to freak out about this project, thing, but like trying to just be more present. And enjoying those times and knowing like, okay, then I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah. But it's kind of like making room for enjoying the highs when they come and finding comfort in the discomfort of that nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
And that's why we enjoy, you know, beauty and art and friends and connection because that's what we've got. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to end. I thank you so much for coming
thank
in, for
you.
Sharing
thanks for having
so
me.
Openly. Where can people find you to find your work and to just hear more of your amazing thoughts on just existing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Chelsea Brink. That's really like my only super active social media. And even still right now, like I haven't been super active. I do find a lot of anxiety in writing down my thoughts since I'm like just like a wheel spinner. So I there's a lot of rainbows there, and that's kind of how I process the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes some feelings too. And my work is at chelseabrink.com.
Yeah. Please check it out, because I think when you listen to Chelsea's point of view on just work and life and you look at her work, there's so much joy that comes out in your work. I'm looking at her nails and they're this amazing rainbow color nail. So it's a really great way to finish our listening to this podcast. So check out Chelsea, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Yay.